Your cousin says prison food is not so bad. It's the Onion Radio News. This is Doyle Redland reporting. Your paternal aunt's youngest son, Kerry Brybeck, told you today that, in his opinion, prison food is better than you would think. Brybeck added that he actually finds himself looking forward to Frito Pie Tuesdays.
Really, the food isn't worse here than a lot of places I've eaten, and it's free.
Brybeck added that he was happy to find a prison bitch who had more teeth than his girlfriend on the outside. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Welcome back. I had a really interesting conversation last weekend about restaurants in Los Angeles versus restaurants elsewhere. This was a conversation that I had with a server who is currently working for a very high-profile restaurant and has worked for others also high-profile. I'm not going to say who it is, who they work for now, who they've worked for in the past, or even the specifics of the conversation, but what I wanted to say was that it seems that the servers, and apparently I didn't know this, servers working in restaurants in Los Angeles are much less likely to be working as a server for the rest of their life. If you compare that to restaurants elsewhere, like Napa, Sonoma, even New York, where the staff of certain restaurants feel like a family, they work as a cohesive unit, and everybody feels like they're a part of the restaurant's success. So they become, you know, like they belong. And that seems to be missing in Los Angeles. And I don't know why that is, why she said this. Well, maybe it's because there's a lot of people in Los Angeles that are looking to make it into the movie industry, which is why they move here. And let me tell you this, and a lot of people, you know, they think people are all, you know, we're all in the movie business out here. You are more likely to make it in the NFL than you are in Hollywood. And that's just the truth. It's a hard business to break into. And from what I've heard, and believe me, I've talked to a lot of people who work in the business. It's not a nice business for the most part. I hear bad things. Sure, it's great in some aspects, but it's also very cruel in others. But then look at the Linkery, where Katrina and I visited for out to lunch the last time. I looked around online, and I see pictures of their staff. Same people who I saw working there have been there for a very long time. And I imagine that if I get there in 3 years, apparently, that's obviously it's not something that happens there. If I show up, you know, in 3 years, they're going to be they're probably still going to be working there. But in Los Angeles, that just doesn't happen to be the case. And I'll tell you something. I go back to some of these restaurants. I don't see the same people working over and over. Ludo Bites being the exception, because I think that Ludo treats his staff like they belong. It's a European thing, maybe. And listen, while I'm on the subject of the Linkery, which I cannot say enough nice things about, truly a local-minded restaurant that tries to buy fresh ingredients grown as locally as possible, and they pair really great beer with amazingly thought-out dishes prepared by a chef who's very beer-centric, just something you think would be too much to ask for. Now, why can't other restaurants work like this? And San Diego, listen, let's start looking at San Diego a little closer here. There were times that we thought we were in Sonoma. That's how food-centric that town was, that whole area. Some of the nation's best beer coming out of San Diego. They have growers and farmers all around them. There's a beatnik attitude all around you. The farmer's market we visited in Little Italy, so impressive that I wish I could visit it every week. Fresh chickens from a local farm, oysters, seafood from another place that sources nearby. Carlsbad Aqua Farms was there. That's a place that Stone Brewing was using in their bistro when they did some special dinners. Farm-raised seafood, I have absolutely no problem with. It's a controlled environment. The fish are well-fed. They're taken care of. It's not depleting our natural resources. I know Bogner has a problem with this. I don't. Did you see the Croatia episode of No Reservations last week? Did you see those farm-raised bluefin tuna that they're raising over there? Listen, bluefin tuna, endangered species pretty much. Why not raise them in a controlled environment? They're not going to get caught up in nets, overfished by overzealous fishermen around the world. Makes perfect sense to me. They feed them organic sardines. These are sardines that are so good that you could eat them sashimi style as a human, and they're feeding them to these tuna. Amazing. But on today's show, I want to talk about cooking rabbit. Listen, I don't have kids, and I wanted to do this around Easter, but then I screwed off and I did that April Fool's show, the shit show. I did, Out to Lunch came around and wanted to do that, and it got away from me. But I've been wanting to talk about cooking rabbit for a while because I know it offends some people. And like I was starting to say, I don't have any kids. So Easter, for me, highly annoying. Even if I had kids, I think I'd hate it. All the pastel colors, cute drawings of rabbits and eggs, cupcakes, chocolate, sweets, pink shit everywhere. It's brutal. Every time it comes around, you can ask Katrina. I can't wait for it to be over. I try to avoid it. Now, we used to host an Easter egg hunt in our backyard every year, and I had fun with that because I like to watch the kids, you know, hunt eggs. And as a kid, I loved that. So it was fun for me to watch them get as excited as I used to. But I'm telling you, that is short-lived. The hunt lasts maybe 2 minutes, 20 if you're really fucked up in the head and hide eggs in trees and shit. But once the hunt is over, I want those decorations torn down. I want my life back. So it's not a problem for me to cook and eat rabbit because I think they're delicious. Listen, they do taste like chicken. Technically, there's really no reason to eat a rabbit unless they're in, you know, you've got a lot. If you go hunting and you're shooting down 14 rabbits, man, there's plenty. Why buy a chicken? And rabbits, it's not like they're in short supply either. If you know anything about rabbits, they like to make boom boom a lot, you know? They don't call it fucking like bunnies for nothing. So there are plenty of rabbits to eat, and today we're going to cook one. I'm going to talk about cooking. I'm going to basically share a recipe with you. I'm not going to cook it, although I have. I did. Anyway, it's delicious. Rabbit with olives. It's French. Funniest story, too. Listen, we lived where we had the Easter egg hunt. I would say very rural area, okay? We were living there when I started the show. Great area, very rustic at times. Nice place to live, very quiet. About a mile from us, around the corner, was this house. And they'd have a sign up every 4 months or so, especially around Easter. Sign said, rabbits for sale. And I guess they raised rabbits in their backyard, and they'd sell them out of their house. Not a bad business. If you think about this, you feed them some cheap lettuce, give them some water. They basically reproduce a few times a year, so you always have a steady supply of bunny rabbits. What was funny as hell was that we'd be coming home from something. We'd pass this house, and every once in a while, you'd see a rabbit darting across the street. I mean, they'd get out, you know, and from time to time, you'd always see one of these things hauling ass out of there, like it was on a prison break or something. And every time I'd see one, I'd do this same voice, "Woohoo! So long, suckers! I'm out of here!" And you think, you know, seriously, where the hell does this rabbit think he's going? Now, you've been raised in a cage all your life. They brought you food and water every day. You had it made. I don't think these things are being raised as food. They're being raised for pets. So the fear of impending doom wasn't a motivator. Maybe they just didn't want to be caged up. I don't know what was going on over there. But all that time, you know, you never had to scrounge around for food, find shelter. Now you're out in the wild. And then you start seeing more coyotes. So nature's taking its course there. But Katrina and I visited the Linkery in San Diego, right? And when I did the Out to Lunch, if you guys haven't seen that, by the way, you should check that out. Out to Lunch. It's on mylifeasafoodie.com. This is kind of on topic. I wanted to bring it up. Jay Porter owns and runs this place. It's, like I said before, definitely a restaurant. I suggest everybody who visits San Diego has to check this out. Farm to table. They make all their in-house charcuterie, craft beer tap list. Makes you fall in love with the place. Hey, what got me started on this 2 years ago, Jay served rabbit on his menu because this local farm raised them, and he wanted to provide it to his customers. And this woman lost her shit over it and tried to get people to boycott his restaurant, El Take It Easy, which is a Mexican version of the Linkery. And he was serving rabbit on the menu. She said that rabbits were pets, not food, and that we shouldn't eat them. Now, this is really short-sighted, and I think it's how a lot of people think, which is kind of foolish. I had no idea this had happened because I only started following Jay through his blog, but she wrote a letter to the editor of a city newspaper in San Diego, and he had responded to it and posted his response on his blog, which went like this. In reply to Betty Gillis's letter of June 16th, in which she calls for a boycott of El Take It Easy on the grounds that cooking rabbit is wrong due to its companionability and is furthermore a diabolical gateway to eating kittens, parrots, and seals, most domestic meat animals are great companions, as they have been bred for 10,000 years, to not only be delicious, but also pleasant contributors to a homestead. Miss Gillis, one presumes, would have us instead only eat animals that are ill-tempered, like sea bass, or more likely raised by faceless industrial corporations in factories where no human can interact with the animals or see the abuses perpetrated upon them. This is the kind of meat production that leads to E. coli outbreaks, superbugs, swine flu, downer cows, and the tragic abuse of both animals and human workers. If Miss Gillis's boycott is successful, she will be hurting local farmers who treat their animals and workers well, and she will be advancing the interests of corporate meat factories such as Cargill and Tyson. I recommend the movie Food Incorporated as a starting point for Miss Gillis to see what she's advocating. Meanwhile, rabbit, which is traditionally eaten throughout Europe, is delicious, easy to raise, and a great source of wholesome meat in areas like ours where pasture is not abundant. Great letter. Really kind of set it straight. And it makes sense to do this because later in the show, a lot of what he just wrote is kind of happening right now. So she in turn emails Jay with this. Dear Mr. Porter, I may be local, but if we met, I think you would agree that I'm not an old biddy. I don't know where that came from. I was disappointed to learn through Tom Blair's column in the Union Tribune that your restaurants serve rabbit. I have two pet rabbits that live in my house. I consider them members of my family just like people who own cats and dogs. In the same newspaper, celebrity chef Anthony Bourdain admitted that when it comes to deciding which animals he was willing to eat, you've got to draw the line somewhere. His line is apparently at cats and dogs. People who own rabbits as pets would like you to see the draw line at not serving our pets. Also on the Linkery menu, you tout that your beef, lamb, and goats come from farms where they are grass-fed and raised entirely on pasture. I'm assuming you do this because you want people to see that the rabbits are allowed to live in a natural state prior to slaughter. Can you say the same about your rabbits? So he replies back to her, most farmers who own pigs consider them to be like pets too. They're wonderful animals. I'll point you to my response in City Beat to a similar complaint. The rabbits we get from Curtis Womack are raised in his own barn in Boulevard. They do get to live like rabbits and exhibit their natural characteristics. However, they do not live on pasture. Personally, I'm disgusted by the thought of people willing to eat, say, factory-raised chickens that have never been able to spread their wings, that have their beaks cut off so they don't bite the other chicken pressed up against them in the adjacent cage, and animals that eat rendered animals and feces. But who wouldn't eat a wholesomely locally raised animal because it's cute and companionable, just like a properly raised chicken or pig would be? That speaks to the very, very destructive set of personal values which I encourage you to reconsider. Best, Jay Porter. Now listen, and this is me talking. It is very important to note that we are not bashing anybody here. If you don't like to eat rabbit and you'd rather keep them as pets, that is cool with me. I totally get it. They're cute animals. I like to eat them because I find them delicious and plentiful. And that's a problem for you, and you don't have any reservations when telling me what a cruel, heartless bastard I am. That is not cool with me. I understand your point. You don't understand mine. This is where we get into trouble. And, you know, you've heard those jokes that they eat dogs in Vietnam. They have eaten dogs, yes. Food was scarce. They were hungry. Someone ate a dog. If I was in a situation where there was no food around, my family was going to starve, I'd eat a dog too. I don't care, or a cat, anything. Does that make me a bad person? No, that makes me a survivor. That is life. Get over it. Top of the freaking food chain. We eat anything we can to sustain. If you can't grasp that idea, you've got some growing up to do. Now let's drink a beer. Hey, Don.
Yo.
Time for another beer review.
Okay, I'm ready.
Are you?
I'm ready. Born ready.
You brought this one as well this time. You brought a beer from New Belgium.
Yeah, it's their Shift beer, pale lager.
Pale lager or pale ale?
Lager. No, it's a lager. Pale lager. Yeah. 5% alcohol by volume.
Comes in cans?
That's the only way you can get it. comes in cans and comes in the big tall boys at that.
16 ounces? It says right here, when your work is done, you'll want one.
Time to drink. A nice pint. A pint of beer.
A pint of lager.
I have a pint of beer,
please. A pint of lager, please.
Yes. Yeah. Let's open them up.
Just in time for The Hobbit.
I love the way it sounds. That's like, sounds like a post-bike ride beer.
Yeah, dueling can openers.
And I'm going to have it out of the can, too.
You're going to drink it what?
I'm going to drink it out of the can.
You drink it from the can.
I like the can.
That'll just give me gas. I'm just going for it.
Oh.
You drink it out of the can. Let's see. There's a difference. You drink it out of the can, I'll go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, cheers.
Cheers. Just a little.
Mm-hmm. Smells good.
You know?
Wow, that's tasty.
That's really good.
You know, it almost tastes like a pale ale.
Yeah, it's pretty robust for a lager, that's for sure.
But yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't have that. Yeah, it doesn't have that twang.
No, but you can tell there's lager yeast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's true.
Yeah, it's good. It's a really good, refreshing session beer.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Hey, what did you say? 5% alcohol?
Yeah, 5.
Very smooth.
Yes, it is.
No, I like the, you know, it's something about European beers that has that, I wouldn't say corny, but it's almost metallic.
It's like sulfury.
Yeah, sulfur.
Yeah, real heavy sulfur. Yeah.
And this doesn't have that at all.
No, and well, this is pretty young. I mean, this was just put on the market the first week of April.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. Yeah, and I haven't seen it in the stores until, I think, this week.
Okay.
Yeah, so second week of April. Yeah, this is young stuff.
Well played, my friend.
Okay.
Hmm. Okay, so Shift Pale Lager from New Belgium.
Yep.
Hey, what's the... Yeah, I always forget this. What's the... They have a division that just does sour beers. The Lafolie?
Lafolie, yeah.
Are they still making beer over there?
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Now you visited that brewery.
I've been there a couple of times. Yeah. And I've pulled out some of their funk beers in the past, and I love them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Lafolie actually is like their original one. And now they do like a couple of other sour beers. So it's like Peter Burkhart, I think.
Yes, right. The guy from Belgium, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's the lead brewer, and he does some cool stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, really good.
Well, thanks for bringing this, dude.
You betcha.
New Belgium Shift.
Get you some.
Pale Lager.
All right, listen. You guys, you can substitute chicken with this if you're not a cold-hearted bastard like me. It's not a big deal. Rabbit tastes a lot like chicken anyway. A little bonier, not as much meat. You're just eating it with less guilt if you eat a murdered chicken, apparently. And I guess this is nature's cruel joke if you think about it. If chickens were as cute as bunny rabbits, companies like Foster Farms and Tyson, they'd be located at Shit Creek without a paddle boulevard because, you know, no one would be eating them. But the fact is that chickens aren't as cute as rabbits. They're ugly for most people. They've got fucked up feet. They stand in their own poo. It smells far worse than rabbit shit, making it even easier to accept the impending murder. But they make a lot of noise when they do it. Rabbits are soft, they're cute, they fuck all day, their poop doesn't reek. They keep it to themselves, you know. It's a little more introverted. Unfortunately for them, they're also vegetarians, and they're delicious. And those last two qualities mean one word to me, and that is dinner. So today we're making lapin à olives. Now, I know I have completely slaughtered that because my French sucks. Dave Lieberman will be the first one to correct me, so feel free, Dave. I know I suck at it. Help me out a little. I'd appreciate that. Basically, in English, it's rabbit with olives. And this is a simple dish, very French, not a lot of prep time, very delicious. And like I said, it can be made with a chicken if you can't get rabbit, or if you've got a wife like mine who simply has to draw the line somewhere. I mean, that woman, she ate veal tartare once because Ludo served it. But I'll tell you, she wouldn't eat rabbit even if Ludo cooked it. And she loves Ludo, so that's saying something. The force is strong with this one. But this recipe comes from Bourdain's Léal cookbook, and I've made it a few times before. It's very, very good. It's great every time, and it's, you know, it's easy to prepare, and it tastes delicious, and it's great with some boiled potatoes or some white rice or something. Here's your shopping list, and I'm going to put the list on the website so you can kind of follow that if you want to print it out. You'll need 4 rabbit legs or chicken legs if you wish to use that, 1 small onion, coarsely chopped, 1 small carrot, coarsely chopped, 1 rib of celery, coarsely chopped, 4 cloves of garlic, crushed, 2 bay leaves, 2 sprigs of thyme, finely chopped, 1 sprig of rosemary, finely chopped, 1 sprig of parsley, finely chopped, 1 tablespoon of whole black peppercorns, 1.5 cups of white wine, or if you want to get fancy and make it with beer, maybe a Saison or a pale ale or something, you can play with that. White wine will work, though. Salt and pepper, 1/4 cup of flour for dredging the chicken legs in, or the rabbit legs, some olive oil, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, tablespoon of tomato paste, 1/4 cup of red wine vinegar, 2 cups of chicken stock, and 1/4 pound of green olives that have been pitted. In a large mixing bowl, combine the rabbit legs, the onion, celery, carrots, garlic, bay leaves, whole sprigs of thyme, rosemary, and parsley, peppercorns, and then the wine. Let this marinate for about 2 hours. If you want to put it in the fridge, let it go. Let it go. Take it out about an hour or so before you're ready to cook so it gets up to room temperature. Drain the marinade, reserve the liquid, and then reserve the vegetables separately, okay? Pat the legs dry, season them with salt and pepper, and then dredge them in 1/4 cup of flour. Heat some olive oil over high heat in a Dutch oven. Once the oil's hot, add some butter, and then brown the legs on both sides until they're dark and golden brown. About 3 to 4 minutes per side should do it. Now, their legs, they've got bones in them. They'll take a while to cook. 3 to 4 minutes a side is fine. All you're doing right now is browning them. We're going to fully cook them later. They're going to braise in this sauce. Remove the legs from the pan. Set them aside. Throw the vegetables from the marinade into the pot. Cook it over high heat until they're brown and caramelized. Stir in the tomato paste and about 1 tablespoon of flour. Mix that nice and well with a wooden spoon until it's all coated. Cook it for about a minute, and then stir in the vinegar and the reserved marinade liquid, all that wine and stuff. Cook that over high heat until the liquid's thick enough to coat the back of a spoon. Stir in the chicken stock, bring that to a boil, throw in the rabbit legs again, reduce it to a simmer, cook over low heat covered for about 1 hour or until the meat is very, very tender, remove the legs, set them aside. Strain the cooking liquid, return it to the pot, return the legs to the pot, bring that back up to a boil, throw in the olives and the chopped herbs, season with a little salt and pepper, serve it up. It's fantastic. I'm telling you, didn't that sound easy? It really is about that fast. The longest cooking time in this whole thing is when they have to braise. But braise over low heat, they're ridiculously good. It falls right off the bone. And I'm telling you something, if you can get past the idea that you're eating rabbit, you will not think you're eating rabbit. But you will know that a rabbit is very tasty. You know, it just is. It's a very tasty animal. And it's unfortunate that we have to become children about this thing. Oh, you're eating Peter Rabbit, or Peter Cottontail, or whoever the hell he is. He's a rabbit, okay? It's like the Foster Farms chickens. You don't want to eat those because they're ugly and fat and eat fast food and they're bloated. Yeah. If that chicken was cute, it'd be a different story. Actually, maybe it wouldn't. Yeah, I don't know.
It caught the attention of everyone in the newsroom today when the government reported a new case of mad cow disease, the first in this country in 6 years. And the immediate question was, of course, is the public in any danger? We asked Wyatt Andrews to look into it.
This time, the disease was found in a dead 5-year-old cow that was taken here, the Baker Commodities rendering plant in California. It was about to be ground into pet food when a random test discovered the illness. The USDA stressed there was never a danger to humans from the cow's meat or milk because no dead cow is ever slaughtered for human consumption. The USDA's chief veterinarian is John Clifford.
This particular animal did not enter the food supply at any time. So there is no concern about that.
Scientists we contacted agreed there was no risk to the public. The diagnosis was atypical BSE, or bovine spongiform encephalopathy, which is spontaneous and not known to be contagious to humans or animals. Atypical also means the cow did not get sick from other cows or from eating a banned type of animal feed composed of other animals.
It is not likely to be attributable to infected feed, which is the method in which normally BSE would be spread from cow to cow.
There have been 3 deaths in America from mad cow disease, a brain-wasting infection with no cure. But all 3 victims had spent many years eating beef overseas. No American is known to have died from consuming U.S. beef since the increased testing began 9 years ago. Still, there are two concerns. Beef exporters are already worried that consumers in Asia will hear the words mad cow and slow down purchases of American beef. And even though the atypical form of the disease is not known to be a problem, Scott, no one knows what causes atypical mad cow or how many cases are going undetected.
Wyatt, you just said in your story that the new testing standards went into effect 9 years ago. How many cases have they found in cows in that period of time?
Scott, there have been four total since 2003, and three of those were atypical, like the one found today. Only the very first cow found in Washington State in 2003 had the infectious form of the disease that could have posed a risk had it reached the food chain.
No danger to the food supply, says the government. Wyatt, thanks very much.
This is scary, right? You know what scares the crap out of me with this story? The fact that they were going to feed this dead downer cow to dogs. It was being ground down for dog food when they caught it. Oh, great. Imagine your pet, part of your family, suffering, you know, a central nervous system breakdown right in front of you because it ate some tainted meat. Makes you consider that raw food diet we were talking about for pets, right? It's great that they caught it, but holy shit, does that raise some questions? It was a dairy cow that died. What about the milk that they were getting from that cow? What happened to that? I think this is a great time to be lactose intolerant, and I'll tell you that much. Yeah, no milkshake for me, thanks. Does the milk get tainted? I don't even know. If the cow has this disease, BSC, is the milk tainted? It taints the meat, but what about the milk? I don't even know. But dude, that thing died on the farm? They didn't realize this thing was sick? Have you seen a cow with BSC? They can't walk. They shake like crazy. Right? I mean, I'm surprised that, you know, when they were milking the cow, the butter wasn't coming out, was shaking so much. And there are a lot of cows on the farm. So listen, I'm sure it's hard to inspect each one. And man, I'll tell you, dairy farms reek. Holy shit. Listen, when we're on our way to Sonoma, we pass through Bakersfield. There, I don't know how far out it is. Katrina would know. There's a dairy farm that, and listen, I'm not over-exaggerating here, you can smell cow urine for at least 2 to 3 miles before you hit the farm. After you hit the farm, it's another 5 to 10 miles, you still smell cow pee. I don't know how these farmers do it. I'd be wearing full scuba gear if I had to do that job. Anyway, this, like I said, this all ties into that whole conversation that Jay Porter had written that letter to that woman. Turns out, another story that was big that broke this week. The Michigan Department of Natural Resources wrote a law that went into effect on April 1st that basically forces any farmer who raises pigs to destroy any animal living on their farm that is not a native species to Michigan or the U.S. That means that any heritage breed animal such as Mangalitsa, Duroc, Berkshire, which has roots in Europe or elsewhere, not allowed to be grown in the state. And I'll give you a hint who's behind this. I'll play this report for you. It's from RT America. I don't know who they are, but they're pretty good. They, you know, the interview that she had with Mark Baker from Baker's Green Acres in Michigan. It's a great name for a farm, Baker's Green Acres. Anyway, this farmer, he raises Mangalitsa pigs, which are native to Hungary and Eastern Europe. We've talked about it a lot on the show. And here it is.
Well, actually, the court appearance that I'm headed to right now is for another farmer that the DNR has sued because he wouldn't allow them to come on his property. He told them to get a warrant, so they sued him. And his hearing is tomorrow. And just so happens his lawyer and my lawyer are the same ones. And my lawyer is going to do some things in court tomorrow, and I just don't want to miss it.
So that's it. And so you are a local farmer there. Do you own pigs?
Yes, I do. And yes, I do. I raise pigs.
And what have you done with them? Have you complied with this law and gotten rid of them?
No. I'm one of two farmers in Michigan that has said we will not comply. And we have filed suit against the Michigan DNR, and we'll probably go to court with them this summer.
So at this point, Mark, you are considered to be breaking the law since you still have these pigs. You didn't get rid of them.
Right. They consider me to be a felon.
A felon for owning these pigs. And how long have you had them?
Oh, I've been in this business for about 15 years. This type of pig that I have is a little different than anything that I've normally done. But see, what happened was the Michigan DNR issued a declaratory ruling, and they have 9 characteristics. And if your pigs have any of those characteristics, then they say that your pigs are feral. I mean, any animal or even a human being can become feral, and I suppose the behavior of that animal or human being could become a problem. But the whole gist of what I do, I'm a farmer, so my thing is I keep my animals where I want them, so I build fences so they stay on our farm, and they don't go live in the woods or at my neighbor's house or anything like that. You know, that's our goal as farmers, is to keep the animals where we want them. We think that the Michigan pork producers are behind this, and even on a grander scale than that, probably the American pork producers. These are the guys that raise pigs in confinement operations, or CAFOs. CAFO is the acronym, confinement animal feeding operation.
So you think that it's the big businesses that are behind this?
Oh, absolutely. They've even come out and declared as much. I have paperwork actually sitting on the seat of my truck right next to me, and it lists the people that have signed on to this. And there's 6 real big ones, and it's Michigan Pork, Michigan Milk, Michigan Poultry, Michigan Potatoes, and Michigan Agribusiness Association, and the granddaddy of them all, Greenstone Farm Credit Services. So they're the guys that supply the money to the big industrial.
And now they're kind of demonizing the pigs that local farmers like you own. Really, Mark, what is the difference between your pigs and the pigs that are considered okay, or that are allowed to survive and that you can own?
Basically, there is no difference between the two. Mine are raised outside. You know, the meat in mine will be redder and more tasty because they're outside. They have sunlight. They get to root in the dirt and all that good stuff that they're designed to do. The pigs in the CAFOs, that's the other white meat, because they never get to see the light of day, so their meat is pale and tasteless and all that stuff. And that's fine if they want to do that. I don't care to eat that, and I'm not throwing stones at them per se. But basically, there is no different. You know, they all have curly tails. They all have straight or floppy ears. They all have a digging snout on them. Our pigs have a little more fur on them because they're outside. Their pigs usually are bald because they're inside.
Now, this is pathetic, and it should get national attention. I'll tell you why. Each state has a right to enforce whatever laws they deem necessary. But something like this could go national before you know it. And all we need is for Michigan to be rid of these heritage breeds, right? And farmers who actually treat their animals with care and respect to be put out of business. And the next thing you know, that's happening everywhere, not just Michigan. Pigs are generally treated poorly in many of these commercial factories. If you don't believe me, look it up. Ask around. And the agency in charge of this situation in Michigan really could give a good rat's ass about the people who live there. And the fact that maybe there are people who really enjoy the taste of pork, not the crap that we see in grocery stores. And mind you, it's expensive. But there are people who like to eat that way. They're very good pigs. It saddens me because the independent farmer, the American farmer, that they talked about this in Food Inc., and I know a lot of people out there hate it, but the independent farmer is being pushed out by the big commercial machine. If we're seeing it again, and it's making news. But I guess they're all making it up, right? It's all false. Falsehood. Unbelievable. Anyway, that's all I have for today. Thanks to CBS RT America for the audio. Thanks to you for listening. Don't forget, you can join our Facebook group. Visit mylifeasafoodie.com. Click the links to the right. Become a lifer like us. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. Ciao.